Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy, Marge Regan. Here with us in Studio 3 for Open Mic is Globe columnist Alex Beam. And as we always do, Marge and I, we were talking, I think it was this morning, Marge, how we'd call him Alex Beam, even if Beam weren't his last name. Do you remember why, Marjorie? Because with his combustible words, Alex is like a beamer with a six-cylinder engine, the hot rod of polite society.
I couldn't say it better myself.
No, you couldn't have written
Alex,
that.
Thank you. It's great to see
and
you.
Speaking
how are you,
of
Alex?
Great to be back
hot,
with both of you.
Is, by the way, just
it's really none of your business, frankly.
He's been in a warm climate, I hope.
I have.
I was stunned to realize that you, too, are a winter biker, that you biked in here today.
No, he is a cyclist. Excuse me.
Stop it.
No,
what's
don't
going
do
down
this.
Here?
You used to come to NECN occasionally and be on my show when I invited you.
Yeah.
And you would always
brag
to me.
When I wanted total obscurity.
You would always brag to me about how you had cycled to NECN in the far reaches of Newton.
Which
so
I
you
always,
are a cyclist.
I always refer to as the toxic waste dump, which it was, in fact, and they put this patina of legitimacy over it. Yes, of course, Jim, I lived a few miles from there.
Oh.
I actually live a few miles from here, but I I'm not like that incredibly athletic young fellow. I do not. I mean, I do bike in the winter. Okay, I do bike in the winter. But
you do?
It's challenging and semi-dangerous, and I'm of a certain age. I mean, it's really for the younger set, I would allow.
Now, Alex, you wrote a column today
that's great.
That a lot of people might find to be of no use. But I, as someone who's been on and off diets my whole life, it's entitled That Diet.
You're looking great, by the way.
I am. Thank you, actually.
Why don't you tell him about your eight little, he comes in with eight little Tupperware containers all with little elastics on them.
Well, you just did tell him.
And they contain Brussels sprouts and
here it is.
String beans.
Here's the title of this baby this morning. That Diet Book Won't Work, subtitle, Kooky Diet, I love the word kooky. Kooky diet book authors have one thing in mind, selling books. What was your, premise there, Alex Beam?
Well, I don't know. Actually, Marjorie, as a columnist, will know. When something happens to you twice, I mean, usually it has to happen to you three times to be a column. But, but with things as they are in print journalism, this actually happened to me twice.
Twice is a trend, three times is a column.
Yeah, I agree. But this time I just went. No, I would sit down at these lunches with like legitimate people, like normal people, as if I sat down
it's
with
true.
You. And like at second one, you know, you're reaching for. They said, no. And they give you their whole ludicrous, absurd. And then they say,
I finished your sentence. They're absurd what?
They're absurd new scheme for how they're going to live forever by eating only corkboard or something. You know, and it's a friend of yours. It's someone you've liked.
I know.
Someone you've been hanging with for decades.
My hairdresser does this. 20 years I've been there.
And you just want to scream.
Yeah.
You just want to go, let's have a salad. Let's relax. You know, let me have a piece of bread. But anyway, it happened to me twice in a row. The second time, which I did not put in the column, was with my in-laws, which was like really shocking. Because they went into this, we were at like a fish house. We're gluten-free. And they're like super healthy people. They don't have celiac disease. Give me a break. And I just screamed. I said, you've got to be kidding. You're just normally sane people. You're laying this stupid trip on me. And that's where the guy said, my brother-in-law said, well, there's always this appeal to the text. It's like a Muslim fanatic talking about the Quran. He's like, oh, Alex, well, you haven't read the book. You know, like I'm going to waste like a day and a half of my life reading 280 pages of BS by some renegade doctor. Forget it.
I want to know what wheat belly is, please. I did not even know there was such a thing as wheat belly until I read your column.
Well, that's a very bizarre title, by the way.
I love that title.
I know, because people think it's about what Jim used to have and what I still have. I mean, you know, men get this thing.
I thought it was a beer belly.
Yeah, well, overconsumption, obviously, of certain kinds of grains and wheat, I suppose, can make you fat. Because beer is, let's face it, wheat. It's grain, right?
Correct.
So, but wheat belly is actually not about wheat belly. It's a believe me, I know this stupid argument backwards and forwards. But it starts from a relatively interesting premise, which is that there's no more grain. That every time that we consume grain, it's effectively a genetically modified form of grain. So what a lot of people, if you've ever read Jared Diamond's interminable book, Guns, Germs, and Steel, which is really hard to get through, he also, a lot of kind of evolutionary biologists make a big deal about, you know, when we stopped being hunter-gatherers and started growing our own food. In any case, this guy says it doesn't matter about that because there's no more such thing as grain. We're all eating tainted grains. And then he has this astonishing list of diseases that he says are brought on. He says, forget whole wheat. He says, it's all the same. And
oh,
he has
no.
A, oh, yeah.
I've been
it's
buying all this, expensive bread at Whole Foods,
yes,
which I thought
$4.25
was very healthy. It's delicious. Pig's fry.
You know, this one piece of your column that we particularly related to, Marjorie and I were reading it this morning. Let me read the sentence and we'll tell you why. Certain kind of person might think that nice Dr. Atkins and nice Dr. Barry Sears, The Zone, and nice Dr. Tarnower, Scarsdale Diet, consider your well-being to be their paramount concern. Now, when we read that sentence, what did you say to me,
Well,
Marjorie?
I don't think Dr. Tarnower was very nice. Remember, that's why Gene Harris,
she killed him
in self-defense five times.
I love that.
By the way, that should
have
been in your column.
Legal team.
When I was a young lawyer, I used to work at Bedford Hills, which is the only women's correctional facility in New York State, in upstate New York. Do you know who was the star inmate?
What?
Gene Harris. Dr. Turner was dead. He wasn't really much of an inmate at that point. Gene Harris, who was much older than the population, That's number one. Number two.
They didn't buy the self-defense.
Almost all the inmates were women of color. She was a white woman. She became like the grand dame, the protector, the caretaker of all these younger inmates.
She was a headmistress.
She was beloved. I mean, seriously beloved by these. It was a great thing. And she was actually quite an engaging murderer.
You know, that's really fascinating. And I want to open up a brief parenthesis. If we're ever hard up for something to talk about, I'm utterly fascinated with the story you just told, Martha Stewart in prison and Conrad Black in prison. Mm-hmm. I think it is genuinely interesting when a person from like our world ends up in the prison population. Even no matter what you think about Martha Stewart and Conrad Black, they have a very interesting reaction to prison life, almost always a positive one in terms of helping. Conrad Black, who's really a crook.
Wait a minute. I'm not sure who Conrad Black is.
Well, he's this high-rolling Canadian financier whom Fitzgerald up in Chicago sent to the famous Patrick Fitzgerald.
A former roommate, by the way, at Amherst of who, Patrick Fitzgerald? Who was his roommate at Amherst? The man who wants to be the next Attorney General of Massachusetts.
I'm liking this. We're like six parentheses away now.
So he was good. I know Martha Stewart was very motherly and maternal in prison.
I know, what I find so fascinating is, you know, of course, you know, you quote unquote, you hate Martha Stewart. You think she's a shrew, blah, blah, blah.
I don't hate her, actually.
But they have a really fascinating kind of change in prison. And Black is a really, take my word for it, just a horrible, horrible person. A real fraud. I mean, a multi-billionaire. And he was astonished by what he saw in Florida. Just astonished. He was in a minimum security Florida federal prison. He said, everybody in here is Hispanic. Everybody in here, like, was dealing an ounce and a half.
Yeah.
And they're here for longer.
Good for him.
He thought the whole thing was out of its mind.
Well,
and he blogged. He wrote very interesting, really, really interesting. I mean, because you have thinking people in these deranged environment. Anyway,
went under Martha Stewart's cut-rate sheets and towels. Nice. Were quite a bargain over there. I'm not sure where they sell them now.
Now, let's do a name association. Yep. When I say Conrad Black, who's the first person that comes to mind?
Alex Beam, now.
Vladimir Putin, obviously.
Vladimir Putin.
Now, you've spent some time.
Of course, and why shouldn't
we? We had David Filipov on the phone about an hour ago from Sochi. You spent time in Russia. We've discussed this with you in the past.
Yes, I love
the way you described it in your memo to us, Alex, when you said that Sochi is shaping up very nicely.
Sochi is shaping up very nicely, and Filipov is making an important contribution.
Now, as someone who knows a little bit more about Russia than we do, because you've actually been there, what's your take on the first few days of Sochi here, Alex?
It couldn't be more delightful. It couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of totalitarians. I don't know. I have a lot of complicated. I mean, to jump three questions ahead, and what's sort of depressing, I think, is that once the NBC, you know, fantasy BS, you know, sports hype machine begins, which I guess is as soon as just a couple of days from now.
Today is the first events, and tomorrow is the opening ceremony.
I mean, a lot of this is going to be swept under the carpet.
Not with Bob. Bob Costas, to his credit, is a guy who is willing. You don't think he's willing to take? He's the guy who sits in with the fireplace and the whatever.
I've read all. He made one comment in Beijing. I mean, I'm still smarting from Beijing. That's the world's most totalitarian.
Wait a second. How about during a football game, a pro football, Thursday night or whatever it is, his halftime commentary is he wouldn't let his kids play football? That's not a pretty dramatic kind of statement?
Jim, Bob Costas may be a wonderful person. He's not going to be biting into this event that NBC News has paid billions of dollars to sell ads against.
Yeah,
he's not going to turn it into some kind of op-ed column.
You don't think the people, by the way, the full disclosure, NBC owns New England Cable News. Is that we're just
We're getting to
okay, wait a second. just wait 1 second.
And your retainer is?
You don't think they are smart enough to realize at NBC that this is one of the most appealing parts of the story to the American public? Report on the athletes. At the same time, everybody you know is talking about toilets that don't work. Drinking water that's yellow.
MSNBC, by the way, Morning Joe has been ridiculing them nonstop.
Yeah, and why? Because they know it sells.
No, you're wrong. Because they have nothing else to talk about. That's why. No, they're talking about it now. With all due respect, once the figure skaters get on the ice, good luck talking to your wife about, like, you know, Putin's totalitarian regime. I don't think so.
Does your wife like the figure skaters?
Oh,
pairs are the best.
They're horrible, Marjorie.
You don't think the first question...
What about the synchronized swimming?
I'm not done with this yet. You don't think the first question that's going to be asked of Lindsey Vonn, competitor, now commentator, instead is going to be, would you and Tiger Woods stay in a hotel room without a door? You don't think that's going to be the first...
You know, it might be
Maybe not.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. By the time you got to the end of that stupid point, you had already lost confidence in it. That's hilarious.
What'd synchronized swimmers will not be in the Winter
Olympics.
No, that's
the Summer Games.
They are my favorite. Putin is a... I'm glad. I mean, you know, you reap what you sow. It's coming back to him. I'm perfectly happy. I mean, Filipov, I haven't... The dog killing story is huge.
We talked about with
horrible.
Him.
I heard you guys talking to McGrory yesterday. It occurred to me the Boston Globe's like a PETA cell or something. Everyone's on the take for the dogs.
Well, Brian is a big dog lover. And his fabulous book, Buddy, How a Rooster Made Me a Family Man, which is a great book, starts with his relationship to his dying dog. I mean, come on.
Right, we need to get some hear from the anti-canine people.
There are no anti-canine. Are you an anti-canine
person? No, I'm taking care of a dog.
Well, excuse me. Wait 1 second. You wrote a column, and I'm in the midst of doing something, too, about what you called the nuts at the puppy toe rally in Quincy, Marjorie. You were used the word nuts.
I respect you for that. I started out from the nut perspective, but I sort of came around at the end by commending them for taking the time to come out and protest puppy toe.
700 you wrote. I remember very well.
Staying home and watching Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Plus, nuts and kooks.
I had to say that I was there with my little 10-pound dog who's been attacked twice by pit bulls. And there were 40 pit bulls at the puppy dough rally, and they were, in fact, well-behaved pit bulls. And there was, you know, a lot of, you know, butt-sniffing going on.
I admire you for even admitting that you attended the puppy dough
rally. Can we talk religion for a second? You weren't here.
It was my most popular column in 7 years.
You weren't here. When you write about pets, it's like you get the 800 comments.
That's right.
Retweeted 60 times.
You weren't here last week. At the time, you had, I don't know, again, know why, but when you weren't here, you had written a column about an interesting thesis that whether the Mormons, I guess the leaders of the Mormon Church, wanted Mitt Romney to win the election, the most prominent Mormon in America, or not win the election. What was that based on? What was your thinking there?
I love the way when you call something interesting. That's like an MIT woman with bottle glasses. Oh, she's interesting. Yeah.
It actually was interesting. I never would have thought of that. And you made a fairly compelling case. What was your case?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Second of all, it was all columns fall into certain categories. That was an idea I had, and I like it just occurred to me like, whoa, you know, suppose America started finding out about the oath of vengeance that Mormons took up until 1925 to destroy the United States. I mean, wouldn't that be kind of difficult for Mitt Romney if he was in that? Anyway, I test drove it.
Wow.
I asked a few LDS, Latter-day Saints people. I said, you know, is this arguable, was what I asked them. And they said, yeah.
Arguable that they might have wanted him to lose the election.
That they might have wanted him to lose the election. Okay. And several people said, yes, it's arguable. Not everybody agreed with me, but that was enough for me. I thought it was a sort of interesting case. Again, I spent these 2 years with the Mormons working on a book about Joseph Smith, one of the guys I quoted in there, Richard Bushman, extremely prominent mainstream academic at Columbia University, once gave a speech to a group of Mormons in Salt Lake City, and he said, "We are the weird religion," and everyone laughed. They self-describe as weird. In the Pew study, blah, 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 on religion and society, they self-describe as a peculiar people. I didn't use Bushman's quote because I ran it by him, and he said, "Oh, I said that informally," but I did use the quote, where the president of the religion, the two presidents ago, said, "We are a peculiar people." He's actually quoting the Bible. But they are a very odd bunch. They see themselves as an odd bunch.
How so odd? I mean, they're very healthy looking. I'll say that for them.
They are. I've quit drinking yet again. You know? So yeah, just the inner Mormon. Yeah. Well, they eat well.
They eat well.
Well,
they
don't drink
coffee or caffeine.
We said this more than once to each other. I think we said it on the air too, Marjorie, is that with at least one exception, the whole situation with the Somerville woman, which I don't want to get into today, one of the most appealing parts, it didn't come out in the Mitt movie on Netflix, even though they did pray a couple of times, but that had really was unrelated to Mormonism, is because they're religious. I thought when he did occasionally lapse into talking, or we read about what he had done, as I think, is it called a missionary when he's in France? And that
sort
of, it's one of the most compelling, humanizing sides. You don't
but
think so?
I know, I completely
and,
agree with
and
you.
And I think he was going through the same thing that maybe the leaders of the Mormon church were. If I talk about this, one, it will say more good things about me, but two, it's going to raise a whole can of worms that maybe I don't want to get into or I don't want to open up.
Did he spend all that time as a missionary, unable to get successfully recruit anybody?
No baptisms. I and others have written that. I'm not 100% sure it's true, like so many things I've written. I mean, I've seen it in print. I've seen it in print that he did not have any baptisms or conversions or investigations.
That's very frustrating. All
that time. Yeah, I mean, that's a whole separate thing, you know, like what are the missionaries doing? Of course, I'm sure you're familiar with these many religious arguments that feel that rejection is actually part of the religion, that if people reject your religion, it strengthens your commitment to your religion. So it's pretty in fact, there's some fascinating changes going on right now. But still, asking generally young men, they have obviously female missionaries now, but asking these people to do what's called tracting, you know, 8 hours a day, you know, opening doors that are slammed in your faces, that's a very powerful it binds the people who do the work together, and it also binds them to the religion. Or, of course, the opposite happens and they completely abandon.
Well, you know, one last thing about this, despite what you are saying, Marjorie, and Alex to a lesser degree, one of the things they screwed up at their convention, not only was the Clint Eastwood thing, but if I recall, prior to prime time, there were a bunch of families who stood up at the mic and gave speeches about what Mitt Romney meant in their lives. More than one, if I recall, were through his work in the Mormon church that I have to say, and I was watching, I don't know, on one of the cable networks or something, and it was really compelling. You're making a face at me.
I'm always making faces because it's radio. I kind of agree with you, but in that column, I sort of got away with, you know, analogizing the situation to the Jews, you know, in the 50s. And
make the points you made for those who didn't read the column.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. You don't hear it that much anymore, but when Jews were really breaking through in the United States, which was really after World War II, there was a phrase in it that was current, like, is it good for the Jews?
Both of my grandparents, who were religious but not wildly religious, said it all
time. You still hear
it. Yeah, you hear it a lot less. But, you know, and it's hard to explain in print. It's hard to explain on the radio because people think, oh, well, that sounds a little anti-Semitic. It's not. And it's what Jews said about themselves, this idea that if we get so exposed again, look what happened to us in Central Europe. You know, we started getting very exposed on the economic and social fronts, and people decided to do away with us. So in a way, I feel the point I was making was that it was certainly not at all bad. It was bad for Mitt and his family, perhaps, that he didn't win the election. But the Mormon church, they take the long view. You know, Joseph Smith himself ran for president. Romney's father ran for president. They didn't need this win at all. And I don't think they're unhappy that they didn't get it.
Okay, we only have 90 seconds left. But you are not a Mormon. You're an Episcopalian. Is that correct?
Correct.
Do you attend? We were discussing something you may be familiar with. Do you attend Trinity Church or do you not?
I do, in fact.
Oh, you do?
I attend.
Oh, you do?
And I like Trinity Church.
Well, then you only
Church.
Have a minute to give your reaction.
Can I stall on this?
We invited the rector, Reverend Lloyd, onto the show, but he was in a meeting. The day the article appeared on the front page of the Globe.
You're going to explain about the...
Right, church bought him a $3.6 million condo. And, you know, and one of the reasons...
Tuscan-like.
One of the reasons they did it is so they could have meetings and things there. And the interesting thing is somebody who's a member of the Trinity Church sent us the notice today that there'll be a Q&A for members of the church to ask questions. Amazingly, it's not at his condo. Even though there's room for it, it is at the church itself. So what's your quick reaction to the condo purchase? Please, Alex.
I actually prepared for this question. with deep Episcopalian. I wanted.
Okay, you have 1 minute. Go ahead.
No, I thought I had 60 seconds. Or
you
something.
Have 30 seconds.
You do.
Go ahead.
Tick tick tick.
You have a minute.
Oh yeah. No, I'm actually hilarious. This person rather sardonically pointed out that the female rector, who preceded Sam Lloyd, well, walked to the church from her apartment in Jamaica Plain.
Is that true?
No, $3.6 million.
Oh,
why didn't she need to live in proximity to the church?
Well, that, it's all super inside baseball. It's super inside baseball. I did research this. She quote unquote only was there 5 or 6 years. So they figured, oh, she wasn't really committed, blah, blah, blah. But that's the kind of detail I'm sure the Globe somehow overlooked and that you wouldn't really want to have out there. But I don't know what the, you know, it's a very rich and powerful church. I think it's a wonderful church to attend. I'm not a dues paying member. Yeah. I'm a free rider, and I believe in luxury accoutrements for everyone.
Fine. Isn't that the word?
It's been
for
a pleasure,
Alex
Beam. We missed you. Actually,
okay.
Great. Nice to be back.
Oh, why don't you tell us what your Twitter handle is? Because you actually occasionally have something.
Yeah,
amusing
thanks.
There.
I'll put this up. It's I'm Alex Beam. You're not.
Exactly.
I'm
Alex. No, that
but
is
that's
really what
these
it is.
Other Alex Beam.
Fine.
Okay.
Hostile.
Fine. Thanks.
Nice to see you, Alex.
Okay.
Yeah. Stay in school.
Alex Beam is a very hostile columnist for the Boston Globe and the author of several books. We will tell you at some point what they are. Anyway, coming up, we'll mark the 50th anniversary of the Beatles with a look at how the British mop tops forever changed art and culture. That is next on 89.7 WGBH.